everybody. I'm Stephanie Beaumont, and this is CNB Seen and Heard, rolling through our eighth season of celebrating the four Atlantic provinces here on Cove FM, where with each broadcast, I want to bring you just a little bit closer to some of the amazing personalities that make up this corner of the planet. They may be native to Nova Scotia or New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island or Newfoundland and Labrador, or they may be kindred spirits who simply adore living and working in Atlantic Canada. The only requirement here is that you're willing to raise the fun flag and wave it in salute of Canada's awesome East Coast. And our chats will be just that. Very conversational, not entirely sensible, and with any luck, totally enjoyable. And with today's guest, I was over the moon. And I mean, as far as fun flag wavers for PEI go, you'll find no finer, or for the record, busier. Now, for the sake of full transparency, I want to share two things up front. The first is that I would need a couple of dozen shows to squeeze in all of this woman's work, from her early days in front of the camera on Emily of New Moon to her directorial debut of The Snake, making its world premiere at South by Southwest last month. Oh, she's racked up countless creative projects for the big and small screen. And the second thing I need you to know, we recorded this call during the tiniest smidge of daylight on her schedule during the Canadian Media Producers' big primetime 2026 festival this past January, where she was booked to speak as an industry expert. So again, we're limited time-wise there too. Did we talk about her making Playback Magazine's prestigious 10 to watch list? No, we didn't. Did we celebrate all the amazing things she's done for the Charlottetown Film Festival? Look, I promise I'll put that at the top of my list for our next chat. And I've got a candle burning for that. For this call, I was focused on her super cool debut feature, The Snake, and how she was feeling about its screening at one of the coolest festivals on the planet. We talked about her righteous company, Club Red Productions, what it takes to be a producer, and as many of her projects, past, present, and future, that we could. And naturally, we celebrated her affinity for the homeland. Plus, we got to First Things First, played an enlightening round of insights in 10, and even spun some of her favorite tunes along the way. So with all that ahead, we best get to it. Here's my telephone conversation with the one and only Jenna McMillan. Well, they say all good things come to those who wait. And oh my goodness, my day has come. I am so excited. After years and years of hearing all the glowing reviews, she's finally on the line. She's the one and only Jenna McMillan. How are you now?
I'm good. That's so sweet. It's really nice to chat with you.
Well, I'm not kidding. Like between Ron James and Alexandra McLean and of course your pal Jonathan Torrance, we're going to get to all of those folks and the reasons why they're extolling your virtues. But Jen, I want to start this call the way I do all my phone calls. That's with First Things First. They're icebreakers. To me, you're kind of like this, you know, omnipresent talent. I don't really know very much about you, except you're you're great at what you do. So these will be great for me just to sort of get a basis.
Sure.
Okay, very good. Jenna McMillan, your first teacher.
Like elementary school teacher?
Sure.
Mrs. Reed was my elementary school teacher. I also had a kindergarten teacher that I still think about, Mrs. Chang. She was terrific, and I was a child actor, and it kind of started in Mrs. Chang's kindergarten class because we did a whole bunch of little skits and Christmas plays, and I just remember how fun that was. So Mrs. Chang and then Mrs. Reed was my grade one teacher, who was also awesome.
Very nice. So you caught the bug early. Okay. Yeah. Jenna, give a shout out to your school. Was that on Prince Edward Island?
It was on Prince Edward Island in Charlottetown. Yes, I was actually born in Summerside. Prince Edward Island. My mom and dad were both working in Summerside. And then my mom actually got headhunted to create a youth working course at Pauline College in Charlottetown. Wow. So after 6 months, we moved into the big city.
Wow. There you go. All right. Very good. All right. Well, we'll get to Prince Edward Island in just a bit. Oh, but let's get back to these first things first. So our second question, Jenna McMillan, your first job. You may have already alluded to it. I don't know.
It's funny. My first job, I was actually sharing this. I'm at a film and TV conference right now in Ottawa, and I was sharing this story. We were talking about our first jobs, and it was actually technically playing Anne of Green Gables when I was, I think I was 8 years old. There was a Good Morning America special that was featuring the world next door, which is Canada. And they were going to every province and kind of featuring things that are special or unique about them. And so they needed a redheaded kid. And through sort of connections, I was put forward. And it was the first time I had ever really, like, done something like that. And I definitely got the bug. I am a massive Lucy Maud Montgomery fan, massive Anne of Green Gables fan. Unabashed. And so going to the house, I was able to like go into the roped off areas and I was able to like lay in the bed.
Stop it. Oh my God.
I remember
God.
Thinking like, oh, all the doors just opened for me. And my mom was like, oh God, this is a nightmare. Because I very young.
Oh, I love it. And Megan follows. That Anne of Green Gables was the bee's knees. And now we're going to talk about Anne with an E because I know you were part of that. Oh my gosh, we got to get through these first things first. Okay, we're at question number three with Jenna McMillan. Jenna McMillan, your first car.
My first car was a Buick. It was my grandparents' car, and then it became my dad's car, and then he gave it to me. It was like an old Navy Buick LeSabre. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. A U-boat, right? Would have been a U-boat when you think about it. The Buicks are a little smaller now, but I have a feeling based on that trajectory.
It's quite large,
Okay. Very good. All right, our very last question, Jenna McMillan, and first things first, your first date. Where'd you go? What'd you do? What's their name, if you don't mind saying?
I think my first date was in grade six with Bobby. I won't say the last name. And we went to, oh my God, it was Blubber, the Robin Williams movie.
Wow. Not necessarily romantic, but you know.
No. I think that was my first date.
I love it. All right. Very good. Well, Jenna McMillan, I mean, you've given us a ton of jumping off points. I hardly know where to start, but let's start with the fact that you are in Ottawa as an expert in your field. And tell me what you're doing there and tell me if you like that, being called upon to, you know, sort of share your knowledge.
Expert feels like a word I would never use to describe myself because I feel like I'm always learning. It's sort of, I have no shame in saying that, like, every project that I've ever been part of or any project, I make a mistake that I won't repeat. Like, that's my one big thing. It's like, okay, well, I'm not going to do that one specific huge thing each time. So I think, like, I love that about film and TV, that each kind of budget or story is different and unique, and there's so many problems to solve. So expert, I don't think so.
Well, I know lots of people would argue. You love talking.
Sorry. I love talking about the industry. I love the industry. I love training and mentorship. It's a huge part of my company and a big reason why I moved back to Prince Edward Island to be part of industry building. So that means that there was a ton of training and mentorship that comes along with it. And I love that. I love seeing people fall in love with film and TV. I love people who are coming from different careers and something kind of turns on and connects with them. So that part I love sharing.
And you really have brought a ton of productions to the island. Well, you said your company. So let's start at the beginning. Don't be mad. Mm-hmm. But I was looking at your IMDb page, which is super impressive for someone of your tender age. But one of your first acting credits was on another project related to Anne of Green Gables, and that was Emily of New Moon.
That's right.
And now, did you play the and card when you went there to set? Like, look, I was Anne.
No, okay. I didn't. I was in the first episode of Emily of New Moon, which was a series shot on Prince Edward Island. It's so incredibly cool that series was set and shot on PEI. And I played the role of Jane Page. I was only in one episode, and I was Emily's arch nemesis. I was her bully and very mean. I did not appear again.
But not to type, as I understand it, you get along well with others now. Hey?
Yeah.
Right?
I can play nice, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I was such a great actress, Stephanie, you know?
Well,
I was not. But I did love having access. I still remember I remember the set and being so enamored with the whole process and thinking that it was, like, very surreal that this was happening in Prince Edward Island. Like, unfortunately, after Emily of Noon, shortly after PEI, the government at the time did get rid of the tax credit, which led to the industry sort of really, really taking a step back. And so many of the local crew that fell in love with being on set and part of the film process, the film and TV process, they ended up moving to Halifax or switching gears. So it was a real setback, but it's also, it was an amazing series that was shot there.
Indeed. And well, I bring up the acting only because, you know, you do wear a lot of hats. That isn't one you wear often.
No.
But one of your biggest is producer. Now, for anyone playing the home game, like, and maybe this isn't like, because I know you've already said no project is the same. And I would imagine every day is different. But if you could just sort of broad brush what a producer does for everybody, what is the role of the producer?
Yeah, it's a really good question because I think it is a role that is often associated with money. Producers are, you know, I think that the the misconception is that, you know, producers have so much money and they're the blah, blah, blah. But I see a producer as someone who either they have a project that they want to set up, and so they, at the very early stage, they find a writer, director. They're kind of the ones who start making an idea of reality. And with that comes trying to get secure the financing, putting the team together, pitching and selling and finding the best home for that project, finding the best budget level for that project. And then leading up to that, the project goes into production and they kind of continue trying to fill financing gaps, taking care of any issues that come up, filling in gaps that need to be filled in production. Then it goes to post-production, and then there's a whole other part of producing, which is on the distribution side of then that project exists. The idea is now a fully formed human, one might say, and then you have to bring that, like, human story, whatever it is, to the audience. So it's a process that can take, you know, for me, I've had features that have taken 10 years to go from the first kind of conversation to the opening premiere. I've had other projects that are 2, 3, 4 years. It all kind of just depends on the needs and the timing and the market.
Right. That's a factor. So I'm trying to, you know, an analogy, a sports analogy. So you'd be the manager. We've talked to, you know, tight ends, which I guess would be the actors, if you will, and then the quarterbacks. Then there's the owners, which would be like the executive producers, right?
So I don't think so. I think in this analogy, the and again, it depends.
Are you the quarterback? Am I making you sad?
No, I think we're the owner. Like,
oh, you're the owner. Okay.
Yeah, on the television side, it can change. Like, it depends if it's, like, you know, independent or studio or whatever. But on the feature film side, the producer owns the rights to the project.
Yeah, I meant more in terms of the. Are you a football fan?
I'm becoming a football fan.
Okay,
but I don't know. I couldn't speak.
Because they just sign the checks. You don't sign the checks.
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
but it sounds like you do.
An executive producer in our world, an executive producer would be someone who comes in and they either, like, they are contributing in a way that they connect us to a piece of financing, or maybe they do make an investment in the project, or maybe we don't have the budget to support. Like, sometimes actors become executive producers because they invest a large portion of their fees or whatever. But a producer would be the equivalent of an owner in that they sign the check. They take on all the risk of the project. If the project does really well, they would stand to profit. And then if the project doesn't, they would absorb that loss. And I will say that, like, producing is complicated. And,
many
people can, like, it depends on structures of deals. But, like, broadly, generally speaking, producer is that.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, it seems relatively daunting. And we just see those like little credits roll by. Like, they don't spend a lot of time on you. But basically, you're sort of keeping all the balls in the air and getting it from point A to point Z. Hey? Wow. Yes. Amazing. Okay. And you love it. You still love it.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Now, the scope of it all, because, you know, you started on what I would dare say in the Canadian television landscape goes, as an actor, you were on a relatively decent production. And, you know, we go to another Anna Green Gables related property and we talk about Anne with an E. You were part of that production. What title did you have on that one, Jenna?
I had a couple of different titles. So when the project came to me, I got on board as a unit production manager. So that meant that the show is primarily going to be shot in Ontario, but they wanted to film the first few days of the pilot episode on Prince Edward Island. So they needed someone who knew the landscape of the industry. This was in 2017. And so at that time, the industry was still very, very small. I was living in Toronto, but I came back home and spent, like, I would say close to 4 months trying to put all the pieces together so that we could shoot the first 3 days of production. And then I went on to Shadow. That was season one. And then I went on to shadow one of the directors for the second season of Anne with an E. And that meant that I was on set for the entire episode that she was filming. Wow. And then I very generously was invited, because at the time I was pursuing directing as well as producing. And I was invited to watch the final playback of the episode, which is all the pieces come together and you're kind of ready to deliver that episode to the broadcaster. Right. And while I was there, the executive producer of Anne with an E, she offered me a production role at the company that produces Anne with an E. So I became a creative executive for Northwood Entertainment. And then for season three of Anne with an E, I was kind of in the role of production executive. So I was with that company for all of the third season and then working on other projects at the same time.
That's so great. Do you ever do you ever stop and go, have those pinch me moments? Those like, this is unbelievable. Like still, like I know you did when you were little, but do you have any of those?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, being I'm a lifelong Anne fan. I've played Anne for a lot of my life, as many redheads on PEI do. I really do admire that character. And I think Lucy Maud Montgomery is massively impressive human and so responsible for Prince Edward Island even being in the conversation globally.
Right.
So I think it was a huge pinch me moment to be part of this series that was like a dream adaptation of the story. It was a modern, bold adaptation.
Right.
The showrunner of the series had written my favorite episode on Breaking Bad, Ozzie Mandias. She was like a powerhouse writer, Molly Beckett. So it was an absolutely career-defining chapter of my life.
I just meant in general. Like, it seems to me, like, as crazy as your world is, it's pretty cool. Like, you're very cool. Like, you are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very lucky. I think, you know, I am so lucky to do what I do, and I'm very grateful, and I definitely don't take it for granted. There's a lot of non-glamorous things.
Right, for sure.
The days are not glamorous, but I don't take it for granted.
That's cool. Okay, listen, we got to stop down for our first commercial break. You've been involved in, I won't do math here now, but a good amount of movies, TV shows, shorts, etc. I want you to give me your favorite soundtrack song from any of those projects. Any.
Oh, wow.
Can you think of one?
That I was involved with. Oh, you know, I had a century, since we're talking about it was the opening credit sequence for that series, and it was phenomenal.
Indeed, and you can't beat the hip. So we'll play it now by special request for our very special guest. She's Jenna McMillan from the beautiful province of Prince Edward Island, and we'll be right back with more CNBC Seen and Heard here on Cove FM.
First thing we climb a tree, and maybe then we talk, or sit silently and listen to our thoughts. visions of someday, cast in a golden light, no dress rehearsal, this is our life.
Set.
Welcome back to CNBC Seen and Heard here on Cove FM. That's the award-winning and awesome Rose Cousins with Love Comes Back, a song we've played on this show before, but never with the writer, producer. What credits did you have on this? Jenna McMillan, it seems like you did an awful lot on Love Comes Back for Rose Cousins. This music video was really lovely. What did you do?
I was the director and I produced the video with Rose. I love Rose Cousins so much. I had her voice, even when I just think about it, it makes me cry.
I know.
So good. And that's her whole brand. She's so, so funny from PEI. Right. The whole shore named after her family, Cousin Shore. I think it's on this one, we did it over the Christmas break. We were both home for a few days and we got like, I think Rose's best friend was involved. My friend Ben Rayner was home and shot it. And it was a really scrappy production, but I really love this video. I can't totally remember. It was a while ago now, but I think that the concept was a joint Rose, like we came up with it together, but it's potentially that it was her and I just helped her kind of bring it to life.
Wow, which is amazing. I always think of Gordy Sampson has a picture. Rose is right behind him in front of the Carlton and he's wearing a Rose Cousins Makes Me Cry t-shirt. And I'm like, man, if I could ever get one of those t-shirts, I would love it. But anyway, okay, now let's talk about Prince Edward Island, because not only are you a proud Islander, but you've got a brand, well, I say brand new business, but I'm sure Club Red Productions was operating behind the scenes, but you've really garnered a presence with this. Amazing.
Actually,
is that you?
Small side anecdote. Club Red actually started when I was in high school. I started it with two of my friends from high school, and we were all redheaded. So that's the brilliant reason behind the name Club Red. But we've produced theater, and I directed the shows, and my friend Will Beck produced the place with me. So we actually, in my Club Red office, I still have those old theater posters. So that's how it started.
Wow.
But it did take a step back when I was living and working in Toronto. And then when I moved home in 2021, then it, I kind of went back all in on the company.
Which is cool. Okay, and now I'm a logo fan, maybe from my ad days in Toronto, but that's a clubhouse, yes?
Yeah, it's a clubhouse, and the credit for that logo actually is my friend Michael DiCarlo, who I went to TMU with. He actually designed that logo, so it would have been 2007, 2008, and then I, in the last couple of years, approached these incredible graphic designers, Godin Searle. They're based in Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island, and they did a bit of a brand refresh and just kind of modernized it a little bit. But that logo's been with me for a while.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, it's amazing. Yeah. It sounds like, I mean, I mentioned it in our first segment, just how many people have mentioned your name on this broadcast. And and I always think of, you know, Jonathan Torrance is always sort of the link to so many people for me.
Yeah.
But he's a good barometer. Like if he's working with you, you're a good egg. You know, like he's a great person in and of himself, but people speak so highly of you. This network that we have of artists and creators and things like that on the East Coast, maybe just speak to that, Jenna, because we're going to talk about you going south of the border to a very big event, but it must feel pretty great to represent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we are so rich with talent on the East Coast. It's absolutely mind-boggling. Like, we really punch above our weight on the music side of things. We've got phenomenal dancers and visual artists and filmmakers and storytellers. You know, on the East Coast, we really do come from a culture of storytelling and tough winters, but we, you know, we get through things with humor and story. So I think I have a team that I've been working with for a really long time that I trust so much. And Jonathan is absolutely part of that team and a huge support in so many ways and just inspiration and a mentor for me of like how to lead a team and how to just live life as a kind human. But Stephanie, I did live in Toronto for 13 years, but I always, the stories that excited me, the the collaborators that I wanted to work with, they were always back home. And yeah. So I think like this is just where I am meant to be. And I'm really proud to be part of a group of people that are building it up and making it more sustainable.
That's so great. Well, we wish you all the best. I look forward to seeing Club Red Productions on the big screen in many iterations, and I'll cheer when it comes up for sure. Now, people will be cheering, I know, how's that for a segue, when you head to South by Southwest, which is in March. We're sort of like maybe a month away from that now. But you'll
yeah,
be,
it is, yeah.
So you are taking Snake on the road. This is huge, Jenna. You're going to South by Southwest.
Yeah, our movie The Snake is having its world premiere at South by Southwest, yes.
Are you excited? I shouldn't ask what you're going to wear, but are you a light packer? Let me start there. Do you pack light?
I'm incredibly excited. This is my first feature that I've directed, and it's produced by my producing partner, Charlene Kelly, and Melanie Wood, who's a Nova Scotia producer, yes. who also served as assistant director on this feature. It's written by the incomparably talented Susan Kent,
right.
who I had worked with on a couple of projects, and most recently she was one of the leads of Who's Your Father, which is a film I'm so proud of, and another project that I think really punched above its weight and found an audience. So both Susan and I were excited to flex our creative muscles again, and she wrote this really phenomenal story that she also stars in. And so yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, South by Southwest was the film festival that I became enamored with as soon as I went there. I had a friend who lived in Austin, and I went down in 2018, and I went back there in 2022, and it was just always my dream and goal to have a film screening there. So it's totally surreal. We catered our entire post plan around this wild dream, and now we're one of two Canadian feature films in competition at South by Southwest.
Amazing.
So it's
That's so good.
It's very exciting, yeah. and it'll be so exciting to be there with as many of the cast and crew that we can bring down. And so, yeah, it'll be a real pinch me moment, that's for sure. I don't know what I'm wearing, but my best friend who used to live in Austin is, she's going to style me.
Ooh.
I'm getting a lot of opinions from people of what to wear. I'm just like going to listen to people who are way better at that stuff than me.
Oh, that's so exciting. Well, let's talk about Susan Kent. If you don't mind, because you've worked with her before, she's amazing. I've had the great opportunity of talking to her. Very humble, very hilarious.
Yeah.
Tell me what you look for. Give me like the five traits, Jenna, that you look for when you're working with anybody in any capacity. Like, are there some hard lines that you're like, look, this person does that. They chew loudly. I can't work with them. Like, is there anything that you'll be like, that's a deal breaker?
The first time I worked with Jonathan, it was in 2017. There was a project he was working with a company, a bigger Toronto company, and he talked about me coming on and working with them in a production manager capacity. And I said, as long as there are no assholes. So that was even in 2017. I have a no asshole policy that
I feel
very strongly about.
Yeah.
I think honesty and transparency are key for me. Collaboration, kindness. These are all qualities that Susan has in spades.
Yes.
Susan is by far one of, actually, Susan and Jonathan are probably two of the kindest actors that I've had the privilege to work with, and everyone just lights up when they show up on
yeah.
set. So I think, yeah, just people who work hard and care. Those are all qualities that mean a lot to me.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, now let me ask you this. Are there any projects that you're like, I'm out?
I'm out?
Yeah, like I won't do horror or...
Yeah, that's funny you say that because okay. I thought I was not a horror girl.
Okay.
And I actually met this writer who is a Canadian born from Montreal, Italian, and he's living in LA, and he had a horror and I was like, I don't know. But it ended up, I kind of lean comedy just
yes.
generally. And this story I found it funny, and it was just like, it made me laugh, but I also thought that the story was a cool one. I have a hard time watching it because it's scary. Right. It's very good.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was an opportunity to work with a company based in Nova Scotia, Shut Up and Color, Mark Tetrow and Jason Levangie, who I've admired for a long time.
Yes.
They came to PEI, and we worked, we got it to life. So, no, I don't really have any crazy hard and fast rules. This sounds whatever, Pollyanna maybe, but the story really matters to me. And if it's a story, like I told you, like you can be with these projects for 10,
right.
20 years filing tax returns.
Yeah.
So you have to really like it. And
right.
if it's something, you know, if the team and the story align and it's something that should be out in the universe, then I'm usually on board.
There you go. Well, now listen, we've got to stop down for another commercial break, and it is award show season. You mentioned being up for, you're in a competition. What would that be? Best foreign film? No, wouldn't be. South by Southwest is from everywhere, right? So
yeah,
are you in a genre?
Yeah, awards. Like they give out probably like best, like audience award, and then there's like the
juried
winner of the festival, like a juried award. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, we'll keep a good thought there. But as a rule, are you big on award shows? Like, do you watch? Like, I'm a junkie. I will watch them all. You know.
Yeah. I mean, the Oscars is my Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I have hosted many an Oscar party.
Nice.
So yeah, I absolutely love the Oscars. The others, I am not as dedicated. But I am an Oscar girly, that's for sure. And I love the Canadian Screen Awards. I got the chance to go a couple years ago with Jeremy Lerner when Susan Kent and Chris Locke were up for awards, as well as Fatima Hope, our makeup artist, and my shows that I... one of the series that I produced with Jonathan, it was also up for a couple of nominations.
Nice.
So I love the Canadian Screen Awards too.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, I bring it up only because the sidekick and I, every year, I do another little show on this station called Soundtrack, and it celebrates the music of the movies, as you might imagine. And we do an Oscar, you know, sort of best song, and we take you through the awards. All that to A, promote my show, and B, ask you, Jenna McMillan, your favorite soundtrack song of all time.
Oh, that's a hard question. Oh, my goodness. Favorite is tough because I do feel very put on the spot, Stephanie, but I would say that it's the same old song by the Four Tops, which is famously, it's in the Blood Simple, the Coen Brothers movie, and I think about that all the time, and the way that they use that song is so like juxtaposed to what you're seeing on screen.
Yes.
And it's a real banger as well. So that's the one that comes to mind.
Oh, so super cool. We'll play this now for Jenna McMillan. We'll have more when we return here on CNBC Seen and Heard. But right now on Cove FM, here's same old song.
You're sweet as a honeybee, but like a honeybee stings, you're gonna But
hide.
Not in Love, a flashback for me and a favorite for my guest today, Jenna McMillan. Jenna, tell me why you want that song. It's super cool, but there's got to be a reason for it.
Yeah, well, when we were developing The Snake, Susan was writing, and that was a song that she kept kind of referencing as a needle drop. And it's a very like pivotal scene of the movie. And when we were going to set the first day, that was the song that I just played over and over and over and over. So it's the one that's kind of my pump up of 2025.
There you go. Well, that I mean, I talked about having the show soundtrack, and I always give the story behind the song from the composers to the music supervisors and stuff like that. But as a producer, do you ever have projects where the creatives are like, it's gotta be this song, and you're like, it's too much money, or that's impossible. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like, yeah. Jeremy Larder, who's your father, he had like some old songs that we knew we couldn't get, but to others that we were surprised at how expensive it was. And, you know, it was one of those things where we all fell in love with the tent music. And
right. And
then I, as a producer, have to like crush souls, break hearts. It actually, Stephanie is why I worked with the same music supervisor, Aaron Como, who did Who's Your Father. And we very early on established songs from local artists. Like, we have such a killer soundtrack for The Snake and for Who's Your Father that we built ahead of time, that we knew that we could get. And then those are the songs that I started sort of falling in love with. But yes, I mean, we licensed a Saab Mutong song for our film A Small Fortune, and it was a song that just was really pivotal to the final moment of the scene. But the music, you know, you have to pay properly for music, and it can be prohibitive depending on what the budget is.
Indeed. And now, I don't like to talk about money because you can't put a price on creativity, Jenna, but you have to manage budgets. Now, as a rule, I am, even though, I mean, you'd never know it to look at me, but I do have a degree in finance and economics, but I'm a dreamer. And do you need to be a realist to be a producer?
Yeah. I think that producers do have to be the realists so that the directors and the writers and the artists can dream. And I think like that's the tricky part of the job, is to understand which dreams you will work really hard to make happen and which dreams you will say, how about this version of that dream? So I think that, yeah, being a producer, you know, there's a lot of diplomacy. There's a lot of conversation. There's a lot of saying no, hard no's. And then let me look into it, you know. But at the end of the day, I think managing and being responsible for the budget is a huge part of the job.
A realist with a smidge of magician, hey?
Yeah.
Right?
And with a large, like, dose of dreamer as well. It's a really tough industry, and if we didn't love it, there's lots of other things we could do. Because we are, you know, up against the odds sometimes in the indie film world. So
yeah,
I'd say we're also dreamers, but wouldn't admit that to anybody.
Oh, well, and I won't tell a soul. Jenna McMillan, we're going to play Insights in 10, but before we get there, I want to ask you this question. And that is, you talk about projects taking like 10 years sometimes. Sometimes they go quick, but is there a project like that's on the back burner now that you can't wait to get to?
I have several projects.
Okay.
We have a slate of almost 10 projects.
Wow.
Two of them we've been developing for 5 or 6 years.
Wow.
Some of them are projects that I intend to direct. Others are projects that I've been collaborating with the creatives on. So yeah, there are, I'd say, three that I'm very excited about. And some of, and a couple of them are getting closer. I think with the, you know, with the snake and as these projects build momentum, sometimes it can get a little more of a pathway. It can become more clear. I've had to put these projects together.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. Well, I wish you all the best. Okay. Now these are our final 10 questions. They're called Insights in 10. They are meant to be rapid fire. Jenna McMillan, should you wish to expound upon any, please do. If you're ready, we'll begin.
Ready.
Jenna McMillan, sweet or salty?
Salty.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Jenna McMillan, a lot of coffee? Do you like coffee?
Way too much coffee,
well,
yes.
There's no such thing in my world, but fair enough. Okay, Jenna McMillan, morning or night?
Lately, morning. I was always a night owl, but I'm loving mornings these days.
Define morning. Like, if I don't set an alarm for you, when are you getting up?
7:30 or 8 is my natural.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, during the week, on the weekend.
You could sleep in.
Coffee.
All right.
Yeah.
Jenna McMillan, James Taylor or Taylor Swift?
I'm a newly converted Taylor Swift fan.
Okay. Marginally reluctant, but super talented. There's no arguing that. Okay. Jenna McMillan, planes, trains, or automobiles?
Planes. But I love trains. I'm about to get on a train.
Nice.
But probably planes. Every time I'm on a plane, I'm like, we're flying through the universe. It's so crazy.
Right. You have to not think about it. That's what I tell my daughter. Just don't give it too much thought because you are literally thousands and thousands of feet in the air. Okay. Jenna McMillan. It's not about me. Jenna McMillan, your favorite word.
I've been saying whoa a lot in kind of a either genuine or sort of as a bit for a long time. So I think whoa is my current
Are you
word.
Saying... Are you saying woke or whoa?
Whoa. Like
okay. Gotcha. Copy that. Okay. Jenna McMillan.
Good news, bad news. It's whoa.
Whoa. Okay. Jenna McMillan, your favorite sound?
I gotta say ocean waves would be my favorite sound as an island girl.
Indeed. Well, you can't argue that either. Jenna McMillan, your favorite song of all time ever?
Stephanie, you're killing me.
Come on. These are rapid fire now. Just whatever comes to mind. Are you a music person, though?
I'm a huge music person, but I'm a terrible title person.
Okay.
People don't believe me. I have a hard time recalling. I have ADHD, and I have a very hard time.
You have a lot of information in your mind, is what I think. Right? And that's what you should say.
My favorite, actually, this was easy. Once in a Lifetime by the Talking Heads.
It's a great one. Okay, this will be impossible, and you're going to yell at me again. Jenna McMillan, your favorite movie of all time?
Oh, this one's not actually.
Oh.
I have always said On the Waterfront is
classic.
Is up there as my favorite film. I am a big Godfather person. So those would be up there as my favorites.
Wow. I watch The Godfather every Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's funny.
I know. And everybody's like, that is so wrong. I'm like, no, it isn't really. It times out perfectly. Okay. Jenna, again, not about me. Jenna, this is our very last question. Jenna McMillan, and I know with all of my heart this is going to happen because of your incredible roster to this point. Can you imagine what will be in this in the future? Jenna McMillan, when they make the biopic, the Jenna McMillan story, who will star as Jenna McMillan?
Oh, I mean, if Emma Stone played me, that'd be pretty cool.
Right?
Jessica Chastain has red hair.
Yep.
That would be amazing. Meryl Streep's my favorite actress of all time.
So great.
So that would be a dream.
Okay.
There's so many incredible women.
Right.
But yeah, any of those.
And who wouldn't kill to play Jenna McMillan on the big screen, right? It'll be the role to get. And who will star as your romantic lead?
Ooh. I mean, Connor's story from Heated Rivalry would be okay, hey?
If there was ever, like, honestly, if I had a quarter for every time any, like, people you don't even imagine will mention that show are talking about
Stephanie, it. I'm in Ottawa, and Mark Carney, yes. Prime Minister, was on the red carpet with Hudson Williams last night. And,
I saw that.
And Jacob Tierney and the team behind Heated Rivalry. And we watched three very steamy colleagues. It was incredible.
Wow.
Mark Carney was making like really funny jokes.
Oh,
it was
my
like
God.
You can't like everyone here, it was just such an incredible time to be a Canadian.
Oh
in,
my God.
On the TV. Yeah.
I'm super proud to be Canadian, period. It is so,
yeah,
I mean,
me
we're super lucky. First of all, to live in Canada, but also to live here on Canada's East Coast. Jenna McMillan, what a joy it is. I appreciate you making the time so much. I know your schedule is bananas. I wish you all the very best and congratulate you on every achievement and look forward to celebrating you so much more in the future.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. I really appreciate you doing this show and highlighting East Coast artists.
For all things Jenna McMillan, follow her like we do on Instagram at Jenna McMillan and keep up with her film and TV production company there too at Club Red Productions. And you know, I actually don't think Jenna has slowed down a smidge since our call this past January, but between then and now, we have to send our huge congratulations to Ms. McMillan and the entire team behind The Snake, which screened to rave reviews at South by Southwest and even garnered screenwriter and star Susan Kent the Jury Award for Best Performance. From all reports, The Snake is set to roll into theaters this September, and we promise to keep you posted on that. You can find the podcast version of this show, along with all of our other CNBC Seen and Heard episodes, available to stream and download now on iTunes via Apple Podcasts. And for all the show notes and links to this broadcast, you can head to my Omni site at stephaniebeaumont.com. There you'll discover our entire catalog of episodes for this show, along with all of our soundtrack episodes too. Thanks to Jason McDonald for our CNBC Seen and Heard theme music. Thanks to Jenna McMillan for being my guest. And thanks to you for joining us today. Sure hope you will again next time here on Cove FM. I'm your host, Stephanie Beaumont. Be well till then.